And now, back to Rolling Stone editor and publisher Jan S. Wenner's exclusive interview with Bono.
Off we went to Berlin. Now there was a few people scratching their heads. Haven't we got enough already? Why do we have to start again? So that's a theme you will discover. The idea that you can begin again, the idea that you can start again. So I know there was a few people scratching their heads, not least Ali. What do you mean by starting again? We have to start. Are we the beginning of another steep incline? And yes, was the answer. And 3 years of incredibly hard work ahead to rethink the group and to find some new land to inhabit.
Did the fact that you made an album about America and all this kind of COVID things maybe indicate that you didn't have the ideas that you needed to have? New ideas?
Maybe, but that's where we were at.
But anyway, so...
Because, you're talking about all this, you're talking about, I was lost, fan and critic of the U.S., but as fan, I was just discovering, Bukowski, not just, obviously, the Beats and Ginsberg and Kerouac and, coming... more modern, Saul Bellow, Sam Shepard, Corso. America was just, it was all about him. We were being exactly true to where we were at with that stuff. American music, all that.
So it's time to you have to rethink everything.
Yeah.
And you decided to go to Berlin because it had some resonance with Bowie, having worked there, and that studio shows and all that kind of stuff.
The review of the album, in retrospect.
Which one?
Octoon Baby.
It's a great album. It's like all great albums, it's almost impossible to figure out how you could have made it. It is way beyond the sum of its parts. As a whole, the enemy have become much more interested. Your enemies will define you, so make them interesting. And in this case, it starts to be the hypocrisy in your own heart. You start to realize that's the more interesting.
The hypocrisy in your own heart.
You start to see that
as the enemy,
as the thing that you're up against. Uh-huh. And before it was railing against the world and the wickedness in the world, the lack of justice, the what bad things can happen to good people, all that. Now it's what havoc you're able to wreak in your own life if you allow yourself your heart's desires. Strange. stranger fruit. And seeing it as marriage come apart. I know how hard it is for him. He's such a he loves his wife Ashley. He's got young kids. It's really terrible. But I start to pick up the the rot, the there was dry rot actually in the house when we started making the album, and it was a sort of symbol for me of what was happening, and not just in Edge's life, but all of our lives, you know, just maybe getting a little too used to success, not keeping an eye out for some of its corrosive side. And I think it was Jenny Holzer's line, "Protect me from what I want." That was one of her great truisms. Uh-huh. That was an important thought.
Wait, so you're saying, because you're starting now to deal with much more inner, introspective, and therefore tougher questions, is what makes this album so good?
It's a black beauty. For all its humor, in the way we portrayed it, the frivolity of characters like the Fly, the identikit rock star, you know, I dressed up in Elvis Presley's in jacket, from the 68 comeback special, Lou Reed's kind of glasses meets, Superfly glasses. Just, okay, you want a rock star? Because really, I felt that finally the critics were just disappointed that we, in the 80s, that we just never turned into proper rock stars. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit of, oh, really? Damn. It's like, because the least you can do, I always felt like when you're a rock star, is like get to, the least you can do at age 33 is set fire to yourself. get up on a cross, and if you don't, people should ask for their money back. That's really the rock and roll bargain. There's a Faustian bargain. And if you're going to get all this success, and have the albums go to number one, let's see some demise. Let's be there when the devil comes calling, comes collecting. So we created this kind of rock star in a playful sense to do that. Mm-hmm. But beneath all that, the fun and frolics of the pictures on the album sleeve and the tour that follows, there were some very, very extraordinary songs written. Love is Blindness, I Don't Want to See You, and Wrap the Night Around Me. Jam, Until the End of the World, for Wim Wenders' film, Story Between Judas and Jesus, which I love playing at the Hall of Fame. Haven't Seen You in Quite a While, Been Down the Road Just Killing Time. Last Time We Met, It Was a Low-Lit Room. We were as close together as a bride and groom. We broke the bread, we ate the wine. Everybody's having a good time, except you. We keep talking about the end of the world. It's funny. And it was heavy. You know, marriage, Judas. There's a great epic poem by Brendan Kennelly called The Book of Judas, which was an influence on not just the album, but actually on the tour. He said it brilliantly in the poem. He said, the best way to serve the age is to betray it. And so we had this bonfire of all our vanities. This TV station on the road, politics, fashion, supermodels, beaming in direct to Sarajevo while it's under siege. I mean, we were really lost the run of ourselves, but in a very, very special way. And Rolling Stone called it the Sgt. Peppers of tours, I remember. We were delighted with that. And it was a real moment.
I read, you were quoted, I think, by Bill Flanagan as saying that record you want in making the record, you went into saying I want to write do a record about sex and fidelity. We have to have sexuality in music. Rhythm is the sex of music, and so. Those were the themes on your mind going into that record. Is that correct?
Yeah, because there was white people were dancing in England, shock horror, and there was a grooviness, and that arrived in the north of England, particularly Manchester, that we were envious of. And so drummers were getting to more interesting polyrhythms by working off drum machines,
uh-huh.
things like that.
But, I mean, was this record, did this record have especially more to do with sex and you're writing about and thinking about it?
I mean, With or Without You, it's there. You can hear it in the earlier records, but this was a little more torrid. Although With or Without You is pretty torrid.
Was that, you think that's part of what made it so great?
Yeah, it was, in Rattlin' Home we sang about desire.
Uh-huh.
On Acton Baby, we were desire.
Uh-huh.
You know, we let it become us, and we were, we thought we were exorcising our demons. We might have, in fact, been exorcising them.
Or exploring them. I mean, exploring.
Yeah, they might have been doing push-ups around us.
So you were thinking, you were thinking sex, everything was coming out of this.
Well, just, yeah, there was a strong sexuality to it. We're thinking, this is a powerful subject, sex. I mean, if it isn't close to the center, if it isn't the center of your life, which Freud said it was, and I don't think it is, but even if it's close to center, how is it that we have relegated this subject to pornographers and the dullest of minds? So, our work became more sort of eroticized at that time.
And that was a self-conscious decision?
Yeah, it was a theme. We go after albums, just so that you know. We don't go after albums like rock bands. Mm-hmm. We go after albums like film directors. Mm-hmm. This is the subject. This is what we want to make. Mm-hmm. Let's get into it. Let's figure out what this and what we want to say, mm-hmm. and let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Musically, we improvise, mm-hmm. but thematically, mm-hmm. we're much more considered.
This is an album about sexuality. This is your least political album.
Yes.
Ironically, most powerful, one of your most powerful albums. Just said the word great.
Yeah, I think it is a great album.
Mysterious Ways, which is a pretty sexy little song. There.
And playful, too.
It's a wonderful.
And just beautifully, light-footed.
Mm-hmm. Flirty song.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
But then there's some people who'd interpret it and say, well, that's about God, not about a woman.
Yeah, yeah. This is what people are always forcing you to make decisions between flesh and spirit. Whereas, I want to dance myself in the direction of God. I go out drinking with God. I am flirtatious in the company of God. I am not a person who has to put God out of his mind to go out on the town. That's kind of, it's a really key point. Nobody else really asked me about this, so I just instinctively know you know what I mean. It's because you've seen it in music for long enough. The divided soul, Marvin Gaye, Elvis, tore them apart, these conflicts. And they don't tear me apart. And, I reckon God loves all of me. And when my kids, run amok and do, stupid shit, I sometimes get cross. I sometimes tell them not to do that. But I don't love them any less. I just kind of want them to know that's maybe not good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, again, this was the central conceit of the song One. Now, I hate, just so that you know, the concept of oneness, okay? It's some sort of hippie shtick, and I'm just not into it. So the One campaign, I tried to stop it being called the One Campaign, just so that you know. Because, but the reason why a lot of the religious groups liked it is because they like that Ebersteg. And about it, but I wrote the opposite song. I wrote, "We're one, but we're not the same." It was a bitter pill of a song. And you know, the Dalai Lama had written me a note asking me to get involved in this One World Festival, about oneness, festival of oneness. And I, you know, a huge admirer of his. And I just, but I wrote back respectfully, "Listen, we can't do this, blah blah blah." But and a cheeky little note at the end, just, "We're one, but not the same." Because I like difference. I like the gnarliness. I don't want everyone holding. Mm-hmm. I'm not a let's all hold hands and close our eyes and pretend the world is going to become a better place through wishful thinking. I'm the exact opposite. That 60s thing is really not where I'm coming from. Mm-hmm. That's why Imagine is my least favorite John Lennon song. I'm not into imagining. I'm not into dreaming. I don't like I Have a Dream. I like I Have a Plan.
Mm-hmm. You told me earlier that Imagine was the first thing that appealed to you.
The Imagine album. But years later, and of course I love that song on that album, and maybe it did set the spark, but years later, I admired John Lennon for his actions. Mm-hmm. I thought he was just, you know, for just surreal acts of defiance, he's got to be at the top of the list with bed-ins and, you know, talk about putting your head above the parapet. That's the man for me. But not this, what people have, perhaps, okay, let me say, what people have made that song, a new age hymn.
But Imagine actually says, imagine a world without religions.
Yeah.
It's a pretty radical, when you break it down, it's pretty radical. It's a pretty anti-religion song, anti-patriotism song.
Yeah. No, and at that stage he was a confirmed atheist, and I really respect that. But I'm not one, so it doesn't. I don't relate to it the same way as.
It was one about a couple of crises, or your relationship with Allie, or the band,
or was a whole, you know, the whole pile of things coming through there. It's a father and son story. I tried to write it about someone I knew who was coming out, you know, who wanted to tell their father, was afraid of their father, and that's where the spleen comes from, you know. It's a religious father and son. You say love is the temple, love is the higher law. You say love is the temple, love is the higher law. You ask me to enter, but then you made me crawl. And, you know, I have a lot of gay friends, and I have seen them come a cropper with, you know, just unloving family situations, which just are completely anti-Christian. It just cannot, you know, if we know anything about God, is that God is love. And so there is that sense of that's part of the song. Then there's just people struggling to, you know, be together, and how impossible it is to stay together in this world, whether you're in a band or in a relationship
What makes that song right? You sang it for the Hurricane Katrina relief. Why did you pick it for that?
We get to carry each other. Did I disappoint you? I mean, there's a lot of anger and rage in the way.
So it's directed at this failed relief actor.
People had been feeling. That's why we wanted to sing with Mary J. Blige. You know, she took it to church, by the way. And it's a song that.
So you're saying it's a song of anger?
It's quite angry song, and it's an angry song. I cannot figure out why people get married to it. I really can't. It's a song about splitting up.